Chapter 35. When the guards had burst into the garage prison brandishing truncheons, Marcus Ryan was huddled with Jesse Nighthawk. He had been probing the Indian's knowledge of the forest so he could put together an escape plan. Ryan's hopes were dashed as the guards, at least 24 of them, clubbed the prisoners at random. Most of the Indians were used to the sporadic beatings aimed to discourage resistance, and they cowered against the far wall. But Ryan was slow to move, and blows rained down on his shoulders and head. There he had been playing with a little girl named Rachel when the door burst open and the makeshift prison was suddenly filled with shouts and swinging clubs. Rachel was about 5 years old, the youngest child in the group, and like many of the villagers, she was part of Ben's extended family. There he stepped between one of the attackers and the little girl and braced herself for the blow to come. The guard froze, confused at the unexpected show of defiance. Then he laughed and lowered his upraised club. He glared at Therry with pitiless eyes. "For that, you and the girl will go first." He called out to one of his companions, who grabbed Therry by the hair. She was pushed face down onto the floor, and a club was pressed across the back of her neck. Her hands were bound behind her back with wire that cut painfully into her wrists. Then she was pulled to her feet and saw Marcus and Chuck, whose heads were bloodied from the club blows. When all the prisoners had been trussed like hogs, the guards herded them through the doorway and marched them through the woods. They walked through the woods for several minutes until the dull sheen of the lake was visible through the trees. Although it seemed like days, only hours had passed since they had been captured. They were shoved into a shed near the lake and left alone. They stood in the darkened building, the children whimpering, the older people trying to comfort the younger ones with their stoic attitude. The fear of the unknown was even more torturous than being beaten. Then there was a commotion at the door, which opened to admit Barker, surrounded by a contingent of his inscrutable guards. He had removed his sunglasses, and Therry saw the strangely pale eyes for the first time. They were the color of a rattlesnake belly, she thought. Some of the guards carried blazing torches, and Barker's eyes seemed to glitter in the flickering light. His face was wreathed in a satanic smile. "Good evening, ladies and gentlemen," he said with the geniality of a tour guide. "Thank you for coming. Within a few minutes, I will rise high above this place on the first phase of a journey into the future. I wish to thank you all for helping to get this project launched. To those of you from SOS, I wish you'd been in my hands earlier, so that by the sweat of your labor, you would come to appreciate the brilliance of this plan." Ryan had regained his composure. "Cut the crap. What do you intend to do with us?" Barker surveyed Ryan's bloodied face as if he were seeing it for the first time. "Why, Mr. Ryan, you're looking a little rumpled these days. Not your usual blow-dried self. You haven't answered my question." "To the contrary, I answered it when you were first brought to me. I said you and your friends would remain alive as long as I found you useful." He smiled again. "I no longer find you useful. I had the air dome lit up for your entertainment. It will be the last thing your dying brain will record." The words chilled Therry to the bone. "What about the children?" she said. "What about them?" Barker's icy gaze swept the prisoners as if they were cattle being led to slaughter. "Do you think I care for any one of you, young or old? You are nothing more to me than snowflakes. You'll all be forgotten once the world learns that an insignificant Eskimo tribe controls a significant portion of the ocean. Sorry I can't stay. Our timetable is very precise." He spun on his heel and disappeared into the night. The prisoners were rounded up and herded outside and toward the lake. Moments later, their steps echoed on the long wooden pier. The dock was in darkness except for the lights on what looked like a barge, only with a catamaran hull. As they moved closer, Therry saw that a conveyor belt, flush with the deck, led from a bin in the bow to a wide chute at the stern end. She surmised that the strange craft must be used as a movable feeding station. The feed went into the bin and was transported via the belt and dumped into the fish cages through the chute. An awful thought came to her, and she yelled a warning. "They're going to drown us!" Marcus and Chuck had seen the barge as well, and at her words they struggled against their captors. All they got for their trouble were club blows that took the fight out of them. Rough hands grabbed Therry and pushed her onto the barge. She stumbled and crashed onto the deck. She managed to twist her body so she didn't come down face first on the hard surface, and most of the shock was absorbed at great, painful cost by her right arm. Her knee hurt like hell, too. She didn't have time to dwell on her injuries. Duct tape was slapped across her mouth so she couldn't cry out. Then her ankles were bound, a heavy weight was tied onto her wrist bindings, and she was dragged along to the end of the barge and stretched crosswise across the belt. She felt another, smaller body against hers. She looked over and, to her horror, saw that the next victim in line was Rachel, the little girl she had befriended. Then came the SOS men and the other prisoners. The preparations for multiple murder went on until all the prisoners were laid across the belt like cordwood. Then the barge's inboard motors rumbled into life. The lines were cast off the pier and the barge began to move. Therry couldn't see where they were going, but she managed to turn to face the child and tried to comfort the girl with her eyes, although she was sure they were filled with terror. In the distance, she could see the light from the dome rising above the trees, as Barker had promised. She vowed that if she ever got the chance, she would kill him personally. The motors only went for a short while, then they cut out, and there was the splash of an anchor in the water. Therry struggled against her bindings, to no avail. She tensed, preparing for the worst. It came a minute later, when the motor that powered the conveyor belt started. The belt began to move, carrying her closer to the lip of the chute and the cold, dark water beyond.